Unspoken Issues.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Unspoken Issues podcast. It is I, Jesse Starcher, bringing you in here for, we'll just say, your podcast dose of 90s comics associated with the Unspoken decade. And joining me, of course, is one Chris Armstrong. Chris Armstrong, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well.
Yeah, good
happy to be here.
Glad, man. This is our first member-suggested poll that was put up.
We've got the Unspoken Issues podcast Facebook page. Jesse kind of put out a call for suggestions for people to suggest what we might put up as poll options as far as what we're going to cover. And we had quite a few responses. And Evan Bevins, who I believe he was on an episode with me discussing Bad Rock and Company about a year ago. And he's been on your podcast source material several times, but he suggested 90s spins on classic teams. So it was Fantastic Force and the Secret Defenders. And I believe Secret Defenders won pretty handily. It wasn't like a blowout, but it got the easy win, I think.
Yeah, it was Secret Defenders, 63% of the vote. Fantastic Force gets 37%, if I do my subtraction correctly. Yeah, both of these first issues, just personally, I hadn't read either one of them. I knew they existed. I think I've seen the cover for Secret Defenders a lot.
And long boxes galore at comic shops everywhere.
That's probably why. Fantastic Force, though, I can't say that I've ever, at least as far as I know, I don't think I've come across any of that, which surprises me because go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Fantastic Force came along a little later, maybe after the bubble had kind of burst, so there probably aren't as many copies. Like, Secret Defenders came out in the midst of, like, Marvel and DC and Image just shoving out as much product as possible every month.
Yeah, they were ramping things up, dude.
Yeah, but I think by the time Fantastic Force rolled around, plans were probably already in place before kind of the bubble burst, but by the time it came out, I think it had already slowed down quite a bit. So you probably didn't see as many of those as you would like to hear Defenders.
Fantastic Force number one. Yeah, well, this is about a year and a half, I would say, afterwards. So that's a long time when you're talking comic books. So the 90s were getting going, just like you said. This was Mike's Amazing World of Comics has Secret Defenders number one coming out January 12th, 1993. Yeah, that's when it hits shelves. Fantastic Force hits shelves September 6, 1994. So like I said, we're talking probably a year and a half after this. So yeah,
Fantastic Force also hitting stands about 6 months after I was out of the loop on comics. It was early 94 whenever I kind of got out of it for about a year and a half. So I've never read any Fantastic Force. I was going to try and read that issue before we recorded, I just didn't have a time, but I've never read Fantastic Force.
Neither have I. So let's get down the stats here for Secret Defenders number one. You look at that issue, you see a $2.50 price tag. Most likely it's because of that beautiful cover. Doctor Strange and everybody coming at you. It's one of those classic. I mean, that's a classic cover for a Marvel comic, in my opinion, where you've got all the characters and you've got Doctor Strange kind of in the background. So you already know, just looking at the cover, that it's most likely Strange that's going to be the driving force behind this team. The story is called A Gathering of Heroes. We have Roy Thomas as writer, penciler Andre Coates, inker Donald Hudson, lettered by Clem Robbins, and colored by John Kalas. So I guess Secret Defenders is that one that you picked up off the shelf.
I don't remember. I probably did because Darkhawk was involved.
Yeah, buddy. That's your boy.
Although, you know, as we'll get into, this is kind of a team book with a rotating cast. So I think Darkhawk only appears in the first three issues. I don't remember if I had it or not. I probably did. My memories of actually reading it are actually from like 5 years ago when I did like a Darkhawk reread. Okay. And I was trying to read everything he appeared in. And I read these three issues at that time. In the 90s, I may not have had this. I really don't remember.
I have a feeling that this might be in another one of those auction long boxes that I just picked up, and there was that first issue. Darkhawk was definitely on fire at this point.
And this issue, the cover, it's got like the red foil. Yeah, I think that's probably the reason it was a 250 issue, because it has a foil cover. partially yeah. full cover, and it's very reminiscent of the Darkhawk 25 issue with the red foil of his amulet, like, bursting out and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking of, too, where it kind of looks like there's just this explosion of red. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's Doctor Strange's cape, if I remember correctly, or the cloak, excuse me. I don't know if it's the cloak, cape, whatever it is. But anyway, it looks like Doctor Strange is like, you almost look at it, and it's like Doctor Strange is this puppet master. That's not what he's doing here, but...
Right, I can see that with the hands, the way the hands are positioned and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, we already talked about Darkhawk being on the front cover of this. Why don't you let us know about the other three members that are going to be taking part in this issue?
Leading the charge, there's Wolverine, which he was already, you know, the most popular X-Man, one of the most popular characters in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, at this point, man, in the 90s, if you looked at the top three hot characters of mm-hmm. Marvel Comics at that point, he's in at least the top three.
Yeah.
If not the top.
Yeah, it was probably kind of a rotating between him, Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and who else? Who would be the third?
Darkhawk, obviously.
Well, yeah, Darkhawk's kind of his own. He's on his own level, really.
Yeah, third, man. I don't know who I would say would be the top three. Who else would be there?
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing somebody obvious. Probably not the Punisher, although he was really popular as well. But
yeah. In the early 90s, I mean, he was definitely popular in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, the mutant books were huge. Mm-hmm. Let's just go with, we'll say Sex Appeal wins and Psylocke. How's that?
Okay, sure. Sure.
Sure. All right. Who's next?
My Spider-Woman, which is Julia Carpenter. So she's got kind of the black Spider-Man costume inspired look with long white, you know, boots and gloves and like an open cap with her long hair flowing. But when I think Spider-Woman, that's the one that immediately comes to mind. Now, Jessica Drew has been Marvel's Spider-Woman for over a decade now. But at this time, Julia Carpenter was Spider-Woman. She was part of the Avengers West Coast. I honestly never really read a whole lot of stuff with this character because I didn't read Avengers West Coast unless Darkhawk was guest starring. And I've never really been that clear on her power. She has psi webs, where I guess she could create, uses her maybe psychic power to create webs and stuff. I'm not too clear on her power set and stuff.
I'll clue you in here real quick. She does have superhuman strength, speed, stamina, agility, reflexes, durability, accelerated healing
all
factor.
All the standard superhuman yep. stuff.
That's right. Accelerated healing factor, superhuman sense of touch, psionic powers, and underneath that, they have psionic webbing.
The old muddy psionic blanket yep. Power set.
That's right. Psionic vibrations, which she says by casting small strands of psionic webbing into her environment, Julia can feel psychic vibrations. Now, I don't know if that's explored a whole lot at this time. I know she ends up getting involved with Madame Web or possibly becoming Madame Web at some point.
Yeah, in the more recent Spider-Man comics, Madame Web has died, and I believe Julia Carpenter has taken on that role as the new Madame Web.
Okay, all right.
The fourth member is Jack Monroe Nomad. Mm-hmm. So he's got the classic 90s, you know, trench coat, duster, whatever you want to call it. The long hair, the shades, and a shotgun, kind of a Johnny Blaze look almost, who was also getting popular around this time. But yeah, he, I don't know how much you know about Nomad.
Not much at all.
I really liked the Nomad solo book, at least for the early issues that I had when I was younger. But he was a former Bucky. I'm trying to think of exactly how it worked out, because there was the original Captain America books. And then they brought Captain America back in the, you know, he was fighting in the Nazis and stuff in World War II. Mm-hmm. And then in the 50s or 60s, they brought Captain America back as like a Cold War patriotic hero. Mm-hmm. And then later those issues were retconned to be a different Captain America and a different Bucky. Okay. So that they could bring back the original Steve Rogers in Avengers.
I understand. I think I read where he is the third Bucky.
Okay.
I was thinking
that Jack Monroe was the Cold War era Bucky, but maybe that's not the case. Maybe he came along even later.
That's a possibility. Well, I tell you what.
He's a former Bucky, so that's he's got ties to Captain America for that reason.
Mm-hmm. just like you had said, this is a there's going to be a rotating cast, correct? I mean, we're going to get a new team, I assume, later on in the series where Doctor Strange is going to pull some more people together. But I know if I would have seen this book, you know, sitting on the shelves, I would have recognized. I definitely would have recognized Wolverine and Darkhawk right off the bat in the 90s. Nomad, most likely, because he was a hot character at the time as well. I remember that series. I don't know if I remember seeing ads or if I just saw books sitting on the shelf there at the comic store. But yeah, it's a different set of characters, too. I mean, Wolverine, you usually see him palling around with mutant friends, you know. Right. Darkhawk, I've read some Darkhawk with you. He seemed more of a solo character at the time when I was reading things. I know he had his team ups every once in a while. Is he a member of West Coast Avengers?
No, he's kind of like loosely affiliated with West Coast Avengers, but he basically just showed up in a few guest appearances. And
okay, is he a member of a team at all by this point in the 90s?
No, he has kind of loose affiliations with the New Warriors and the Avengers West Coast, but he's not like an official member of anything until Excelsior in the Runaways era, like in the mid-2000s.
Okay. And Nomad is just who that, you know, just what that name implies.
Right. He's a loner. He spends his days on a motorcycle, you know, traveling the United States as kind of a almost like a Bruce Banner or David Banner in the Hulk TV shows type character.
Does he have?
At least that's my memory of it.
Does he have like super soldier abilities? I thought that was mentioned in the book, but I can't remember if he had. Like,
I think so, because in the Ed Brubaker Captain America run that came, you know, that he killed Captain America in after the Civil War crossover and stuff in that era.
Uh-huh.
He sort of unceremoniously kills off Jack Monroe, and he's...
Oh, no!
It was actually a really good issue. It was like a single-issue story, and it was the first appearance of Winter Soldier, I believe. But yeah, at that point, Jack Monroe had kind of like had a lot of mental problems and stuff, and I think it was like a reaction to the serum that he had in his system.
Yeah, it says enhanced by the Super Soldier Serum variant, Nomad formerly possessed strength enabling him to lift 1,000 pounds, formerly being the fact that he died in issue 3 of the 5th volume of Captain America. Yeah. So, all right, well, before I get into it, I mean, the floor is yours unless if you got anything you want to say before I jump into the synopsis.
Nah, go for it.
That synopsis is right around the corner, but first let me tell you about Amazon Music. You'll probably have a hard time finding Nomad's 1993 lullaby classic, Bucky's Bedtime Favorites, but you will be able to find the Grammy-winning artist and producer Nomad's 2018 album, Grown Tangs, featuring the title track Gone and Perfect Timing. If you head to getamazonmusic.com/W2M network, you can get a free 30-day trial where you can check out over 70 million songs. That's getamazonmusic.com/W2M network for that free 30-day trial. All right, we open the issue with Doctor Strange running through some very specific tarot cards that apparently are informing him of an imminent multiversal threat. To prepare, Strange arranges for an eclectic band of superheroes to converge in Phoenix, Arizona to stop a bank robbery. The first on the scene is the world's worst babysitter. Now, I put that... Jack Monroe, who has a child strapped to his back as he fights crime, which is interesting. But Jack Monroe, or as we know him, the gun-wielding Nomad, taken by surprise when one of the robbers ends up being a woman, not a girl, a woman. The thieves pile into a car and take off, but not getting far, their car runs into a giant spider web spun by the one and only Spider-Woman. Seeing her on the side of a building, the robber spray bullets her way, but luckily Darkhawk and his bulletproof armor intervenes between the gunfire in order to save her from getting shot. Attempting to flee on foot, one of the robbers runs square into the chest of Wolverine and is soon knocked out. Rounding up the criminals, the police take them to jail, leaving the heroes to introduce themselves to each other. Just then, the astral body of Doctor Strange appears, informing them he has brought them all here as the upcoming threat is tied to the bank robbery somehow, and he would like them to work together to investigate and prevent this disaster, if at all possible. Heading to the jail to talk to the bank robbers, things begin to get weird when a prisoner who had been caught from a robbery prior was brought in as a young man, but all of a sudden, there was an older man in his cell. However, as the heroes approach him, he has a heart attack on the spot and dies. Upset, the female bank robber tells Spider-Woman an address, sending the team to look into their first lead. Arriving at the address they were provided, Wolverine and Spider-Woman discover documents regarding a place called the Second Chance Institute, but then are attacked by a couple of villains. The bright light emitting Tokamak, not Tomahawk, Tokamak, Tokamak, and powerhouse mountain of a man named Decimator. As the four begin to tangle, Wolverine realizes they stand a better chance outside the confines of the building and are soon able to outsmart the evil pair. Wolverine plans to interrogate Tokamak, but before that can happen, a lady appears exclaiming that Wolverine and Spider-Woman will do no such thing, and that they are going to find out why dreadlocks, that's with an X, ladies and gentlemen, dreadlocks, you're going to find out why dreadlocks is her name. And that's the end of the issue. Coming up, issue two, just the teaser, by the way, Macabre. So, yeah, they haven't even met Macabre yet. Macabre yet. So, yeah.
I've heard it pronounced both ways.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good. Then I'm Appalachian as ever. So there we go. That's our issue, man. I mean, what do you think? We got the Secret Defenders right here in issue one. What's your thoughts, man?
You know, I'm not one to normally bag on something just for the fun of it.
You know, it's funny because I can tell when things are going to maybe get ugly when just by judging the pause that you have.
I mean, this is not like a terrible comic, but I'm not like a big fan of it. It's right in my wheelhouse. It's got Darkhawk and Nomad in it. So
yeah.
I really like the core premise of the book, like the idea that basically Doctor Strange is, he's kind of weakened. Like there's some references in the early pages about how he's not as powerful as he once was. And like, there's a cool reference to the Midnight Sun stuff with Lilith, which I'm a huge fan of, obviously. I think we've talked about it a little bit before. You know, he needs help to fight some of these battles that he can't do on his own. So like the Defenders' legacy is Doctor Strange. Like the original Defenders, it was like Doctor Strange. I think it was Hulk, Silver Surfer, Namor.
Yep.
And then Doctor Strange came in later, I believe. There's actually a long letter from writer Roy Thomas in the back of the issue. I don't know if you saw that, but he kind of goes on a little bit about the formation of the original team. And this is like the newer version of the Defenders. And it's basically just going to be Doc Strange, you know, assembling, you know, these random characters each adventure. So like, I think they're usually in two or three issue arcs, although I don't remember because I haven't read all the issues past, you know, this early run. But that idea is cool of like every, you know, few months you're going to have a new group of kind of random characters kind of get thrown together. You get to see these characters you may not normally expect to see together. You kind of see them play off each other and stuff. So the premise is good. I just didn't think this first issue was all that great. You have these new characters, Tokamak, Decimator, and Dreadlocks, who I'm pretty sure only appeared in these three issues for this story arc.
Yeah,
this era, like we talked about how they were throwing out all these different books every month. They were also throwing out all these different new characters every month, just hoping somebody would stick, like a Deadpool or something. Uh-huh. So these three characters are lame, and they just don't do much for me. So
yeah, they're unfortunately they're fodder. Sure. It's just like you said. They were hoping that, I'm sure the speculator market drove a lot of the motivation. That's the word I'm looking for. It probably drove a lot of the motivation to create something new in order to have sales. Obviously, at this point in the 90s, you're all about getting that number one issue. And if that number one issue has three first appearances, and you can tout that as like, hey, this has got three first appearances of characters. I mean, Dreadlocks is going to come back at some point.
Hey, in 25 years when they finally get around to Dreadlocks and Decimator in the MCU, you know, this book might be a hot one again.
That's right. I mean, I think that just looking at, just to kind of go and confirm for you here, I am on MarvelFandom.com, and Willie Tam, who is Tokamak. Yeah, first appearance, Secret Defenders number one. Not a whole lot there in regards to a biography. There are three appearances of Willie Tam, which is Secret Defenders volume 1, 2, and 3. Decimator has How many appearances? 4 appearances. It's the 3 issues of Secret Defenders, and there's a Wolverine encyclopedia that he's apparently in. And Estelle Hawkins, who is Dreadlocks. Dreadlocks has her first appearance in Secret Defenders 1, and her final appearance is listed as Secret Defenders 3, so 1, 2, and 3, and the Wolverine encyclopedia. And that's it. So, yeah, I hate to see the one and done villains, but again, they look cool. Decimator.
Yeah, that's not like a totally, that doesn't discount them just because they've only appeared in 3 books or whatever. There are some Darkhawk villains I like that only appeared, you know, in a few Darkhawk comics or whatever. So yeah, just these in particular just didn't do much for me. And I'm not surprised that they didn't show up again in other stuff.
Yeah, one guy has like a suit that emits bright light, and Spider-Woman's able to pretty much take care of him by just by wrapping him in webs, while Decimator, powerhouse of a dude, going going right up against Wolverine. You know, he's summarily bested by Wolverine, but these two are the lackeys to, I assume, Dreadlocks, or they're, well, they kind of tease this macabre guy here at the end. Macabre person? Is there a villain? Let's look this up here.
I believe so. I've got the other two, the following two issues as well. And I believe Macabre is the big bad behind these characters. I jumped into issue 2 just to see what Dreadlocks' powers are.
Uh-huh.
And as I thumbed through it, I didn't, you know, read the whole issue, but it looks like she basically massages her scalp, and that's
terrifying.
And it causes like hallucinations. So like Wolverine and Spider-Woman have these like hallucinations that like allow them to be bested, you know.
Okay.
And she has like there's some pretty cool panels of her with fangs and like no pupils. Like she's almost seems more like a supernatural character, which makes sense with Doctor Strange being involved, I guess. But
okay. So Macabre, is that a woman or is that a guy?
It appears to be a woman, but she's on the cover of issue 3. And she has like a hood with a skull, either a skull mask or she just looks like death, you know, the Grim Reaper style, you know.
Okay. Well, she looks cool. I mean, she definitely looks cool on that front cover. I can't tell if she has, I assume she has purple skin.
I don't know if that's a costume or what. I don't know.
Yeah, me either. Well, okay. So meat of this issue is Nomad jumping full force into somebody with a gun.
Yeah, we didn't mention that Nomad, you know, he's a solo loner type, but he also has a baby.
Yeah. Is this his child? Do you know anything about this kid?
See, I remember in the early issues of Nomad that I read, he had a baby with him, like that he was taken care of. I don't know where the baby came from. I believe, like I had mentioned earlier before we started recording, I picked up at a local comic shop today, I picked up the 4-issue Nomad miniseries that predates his solo book.
Uh-huh.
And I was thumbing through those when I got home. I think in that miniseries, he finds the child and starts taking care of it. So by the time Nomad number 1 rolls around for the regular series, he already had the baby. Clearly, the Mandalorian was inspired by this character. So
that's exactly
Nomad
what I've heard.
Rolling around with a baby on his back, just jumping into gunfire with little regard for the child.
They mention, of course, they are able to kind of assuage our concerns when he says, "Oh, I need to talk to the undergrounders. Maybe they could keep an eye out on this child," who's, by the way, is named Bucky.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like, is he going to keep the kid around through the whole book? Like, is he going to do this for all the adventures he's on with the Secret Defenders? That was probably one of the craziest things to see. So we talked about Spider-Woman, Julia Carpenter. You said that's a Spider-Woman you're most familiar with, so am I. I remember seeing, I think I was reading some West Coast Avengers and saw her in there as well. We've talked about Darkhawk a lot on this podcast. What do you think? I know that's probably the character you at least recognize and would say, okay, does he act like this? Is he actually true to form, I guess I should say? Is he actually I mean, he's not in here for very long for what he does.
Yeah,
but what do you
think? None of them. You know, Wolverine probably gets the most, like, quote-unquote screen time or whatever, but none of them really have a big spotlight on him. For as far as his personality, he, you know, Darkhawk is fairly close to what he would normally be in his own book, I guess. But I do have a complaint.
Okay.
In a panel where he kind of swoops in
to protect Spider-Woman, who's being shot at. I believe it's the first time he appears in the book. And he, like, kind of dives in front of some gunfire, and the bullets, like, bounce off of him. Bullets would hurt him. So,
oh, really?
He has, you know, he has the amulet in his chest. He can create, like, a force shield to protect himself. But, like, in his own book, he's vulnerable to, like, bullets and projectile weapons and stuff like that. Not as much as a normal person would be or whatever, but his body is not bulletproof. So that was kind of an editorial oversight, I guess, whole inconsistency. But
yeah, I mean, they say he's definitely not getting hit in the... It says, I'm even gladder your armor's bulletproof.
Right.
And he's not getting shot. You can make a argument that the costume is Kevlar or whatever you want to say, sure. But I mean, but it's not like
it's represented in his book. So
exactly. I was going to say, like, if I was to say it was armor would be like a metal plate or something that is it's bouncing off of. I was hoping that, but yeah, it looks like he's straight up getting shot in the chest and it's bouncing off. So, yeah. Okay. Then, I mean, Doctor Strange doesn't play he's definitely not involved in the action that we get.
He's more kind of a guide.
Yeah, he's kind of the puppet master behind the scenes. Did you read a lot of Doctor Strange in the 90s or 80s?
No, I mean, when he appeared in other books, I liked the character fine, but I don't know that I had ever bought a single Doctor Strange comic until my adult years or whatever.
Okay.
At this point, I've read some Doctor Strange books, but when I was a kid, I never did.
Of the characters, I mean, would you say it's a pretty varied bunch of people here put together?
Yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge of different heroes. The only ones who really had a connection prior to this, I guess, would be Spider-Woman and Darkhawk, I think. I don't think Darkhawk and Wolverine had any interactions. I don't know of Nomad and Spider-Woman ever, you know, meeting up before this. Although, I guess Nomad had kind of a longer history throughout, like, the 80s and stuff that I'm maybe as familiar with, so... But it seems like these are just characters you wouldn't expect to see together for the most part.
Yeah, I did get a sense. Now, it seemed obvious, like, Spider-Woman she wasn't the strong female character that you see nowadays. She was like, why do they need me? He's got all the muscles. And there was another, well, actually, okay, so Darkhawk saves her.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So she's about to get shot. Darkhawk saves her. There is the scene of the jail. They're ripping the bars off to get to the guy that's having the heart attack because they want to try and save him. So they rip the bars off and she's like, oh, my goodness, you know, these manly men. What can I do? And then there's even another part at the very end when it's Tokar and Rezar. That's not correct. Tokar and Rezar. When Tokamak and Decimator are, you know, they're attacking Wolverine and her, and Wolverine grabs a hold of her and jumps out the window. And I was like, is he worried about trying to save her? Luckily, it's just like he's like, okay, we're getting out of here. But she seemed very, very written. Like a 90s dainty one. We're not talking Secret Wars. Janet Van Dyne, you know, like, hey, Magneto, you know, thank you for my present. Oh, my goodness, you made me a comb. Oh, goodness. But anyway, I think.
Or Sue Storm in the, you know, old Fantastic Four books that our buddy Evan likes to point out sometimes how she was treated in those issues.
That's right. But she seems like she's aware that she is out of her element and not as powerful as the rest of these guys. I haven't read the other two issues, but I hope she gets her opportunity to shine and do some things that the guys will actually go,
She should be more of a vet compared to at least Darkhawk and maybe Nomad.
That's true. That's the truth, man, because, you know, she's been around obviously
for a while at this point.
Yeah, for quite a while. Oh, well, okay. I mean, I don't really have much else to say. The main thing multiverse was said in this comic, and I immediately, my ears perked up, and I'm like, ooh, okay, this sounds fun. This could go a lot of places that I like. When I was younger, I didn't read a whole lot of Doctor Strange, so I know that he was the guy that fought the magical enemies and all that, but as soon as the word multiverse was touted, I was like, okay, this sounds like it's going to be a possibly good time. We don't get a whole lot in the book other than heroes come together, they get one lead, they go check it out, and they meet three new possible villains. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So anything else that you had to talk about the comic or bring up there? Any talking points?
I guess not really much on the issue itself. You know, I'm a little hard on it, I guess. I didn't love this book so much, but it is only one part of a three-part story. So, you know, there's it could pick up, you know, as the story moves along. The art is not bad by any means, but it's not the flashy 90s art we often talk about on this podcast with a lot of the stuff we cover. So it's not blowing your socks off or anything. So
let's take a look at Andre Coates' resume just real quick. I'll pull him up.
Sure.
And we'll see if he's in anything else that we recognize. You're right. I mean, it's a perfectly serviceable 90s comic.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be the way that I would describe it. There's a lot more dynamism and stuff that we've seen. That can't be it. So, okay. So Marvel.
These three issues, the only ones that.
Marvel.com. Well, actually, he stuck around. First 8 issues of Secret Defenders.
Okay.
According to what I'm seeing here. But I think that's it, dude. I'm just hopping over to 8 comics where Andre Coates created the cover. He penciled 9 comics. And, he's got a credit for Savage Sword of Conan, issue 213. But, yeah, legitimately, he's just known for the Defenders, Secret Defenders stuff that he did. I'm looking one more place just to check. Comic Book Critics, League of Geeks. Okay, so they got him listed in a few other things here. He's listed in apparently some issues of Marvel Fanfare, Marvel Year in Review, and the Wolverine Saga. So,
okay.
Which the Wolverine Saga might be something that has...
Might just have panels from this book in it. Secret
Defenders. I hate that he only had this one shot because there wasn't anything... Was there anything in here that took you out?
No, it was fine. I'll go ahead and give a panel or whatever of the book,
yeah.
Which is probably a pretty easy call. The second page, the full page spread of or full splash page of Strange just kind of hovering and kind of looking at the tarot cards that he uses to get the characters gathered together. But that's a pretty detailed, pretty cool shot. And there are some other good panels in here, too, and the storytelling is fine. You can follow it really easily and everything. So it's just not a flashy.
Well, I was going to say Darkhawk is nowhere on this page, so it must be a good page. If it's going to take it away from Darkhawk somehow. I mean, the panel that I paid the most attention to, we'll do it this way, because there wasn't really anything that really knocked my socks off when it comes to, look at Wolverine jumping at that guy, or there's Spider-Woman, able to save the day and look at that.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be Nomad jumping through the air at the female bank robber. And the only reason that's the panel is because I spent probably 30 seconds trying to figure out where's the baby.
Yeah.
Where is the baby? Did he set the baby down? And the answer to that question is no. Because the very next panel, the baby is still on his back.
Yep.
And it's funny because...
And maybe the baby is invulnerable. I don't know.
Ooh.
Maybe he doesn't have to worry about the baby.
We got people that listen to this show that know a lot more about 90s comics, and they will absolutely... They have the forum. It was definitely a first issue. If I saw this on the shelves, I would have been enticed to probably pick it up. $2.50 back then, though.
Yeah, that was like double, almost. Yeah, I think looking at issue 2 has a cover price of $1.75.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, you're paying almost
quite a bit more than a regular comic.
There we go. That's our two panels. I'll get into comments here unless you have anything else.
Just one more thing. Like I said, the last page is Roy Thomas has like a full page of text. Basically, it's called Defend to the Death, Personal and Professional Ramblings by Roy Thomas. And he kind of talks about the history of the Defenders book and franchise sort of. And he mentions the setup of this series is going to be different characters in each arc. Yeah, he talks about how coordinating who's going to be in each book with other editors, like, hey, can we use Wolverine? Well, no, because his adamantium got pulled out last month. We can't use him. So those kind of things. He doesn't mention that specifically. I'm just giving that as an example. Like, you can't just, he wasn't going to be able to just pull whoever he wants.
Yeah, it's
in issues 1-4, the team was supposed to be Sabretooth, Punisher, Sleepwalker, and Spider-Woman. But he was only able to get Spider-Woman out of those four, and he had to replace all the others with, Darkhawk, Nomad, and Wolverine. And later on, I know that Sleepwalker shows up in another future storyline. I'm sure Punisher and Sabretooth eventually made it into the book as well. But that was kind of interesting that, it's an editorial challenge to try and coordinate with all the other franchises that were going at that time to who they could use and when.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a non-team book where, it's basically members that are kind of out doing their own thing. Usually it seems like, but I can remember, I've said it before on this podcast, one of my favorite titles that I've read from Marvel is called Exiles, and it's similar, where the members that they're pulling and putting together were all from different realities, usually. So they were pulling, you know, Sabretooth, right, and his buddy, whatever his little guy name, and then I can't remember the little guy's name now. All this,
Wildchild.
There you go. And then they were pulling Blink, and they were doing. So they were putting together a team of people that didn't really know each other to go on missions, and that's kind of the feeling, obviously, that we kind of get here. Roy Thomas is not someone that's. He's not a newbie, that's for sure.
Right.
This guy's been around for a while. The series goes on for, I think, 25 issues, I think is what I saw.
Sounds
so
right.
That's a good, solid two-year run for sure. Okay. So comment-wise, Evan Bevins definitely wanted to let us know a few things about his choice here when he... And thanks. Thanks, Evan, for suggesting this. We appreciate it. We're hoping to get around to everybody. So just be aware, if you suggested a poll, most likely at some point you're going to see it on there. We're going to put it up. I know we've already done another one as well for it's one of Matt Cooper's choices. And I think Dean got in on that as well. But either way, Evan popped in. And he said Secret Defenders was such a great concept, although I think the basic concept got revamped multiple times in the run. It started out at least as Doctor Strange drawing a team from what were apparently Marvel licensed tarot cards. They do look exactly. Yeah, they're the Marvel licensed tarot cards. The first lineup was nicely eclectic, but my favorite was the second with Strange, the Punisher, Namorita, and a reluctant sleepwalker teaming up to take on the villain Roadkill.
Nice.
Now, so John Ellis chimes in and he says, what was even Devler's deal? Beyond being the monster hero counterpart for Ben, I recall DeFalco made very vague hints that he had a destiny of some kind. So, all right, right there, I assume Devlor. Have you ever heard this name? I assume he's going to be a villain that pops up later in the series, or are we going to have to look this up right now?
I believe they're referencing Fantastic Force.
Oh, okay. All
right,
which
I'm unfamiliar with for the most part.
Yeah, we are. I'm just hopping into Devlar here. Devlar was first appeared Fantastic Four, number 391, August of 1994. So that would make sense because it was shortly thereafter that the first Fantastic Force dropped on the shelves as well. And yeah, he's a beastly looking guy. So he looks like that dude from the cover of Fantastic Force. Anyway, Evan Bevins replies and says, I only read the first issue, but it's another title I'm going to start collecting out of bargain bins. It's just so weird to see Marvel try to make the FF edgier, although totally on brand for a lot of 90s stuff, which he loves. So there's our comments for the Unspoken Issues poll between the Secret Defenders and Fantastic Force Issues 1. I don't have really much anything else to say here. I mean, we picked our panel. We talked about the book. You have the floor if there's any burning desires before we get into plugs.
More often than not, I'm a big fan of whatever books we tend to cover here.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one's not a great issue, but I don't always like to couch that with like, it, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of fans of this book who liked it, whatever. So I don't want to bag on it too much. I just didn't think it was a great first issue. And it's not one that I would be rushing to get a full run of.
Yeah, you know,
but if people like it, that's fine.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it was probably tough, just like you said. Number one, you got the editorial obstacles that you got to adjust to. Mm-hmm. Number two, you got four characters. Like we were talking about Nightwing. We were also talking about Robin, Tim Drake Robin, last time we spoke, and you were mentioning Chuck Dixon was the one that handled most of the, was it the Nightwing stuff that he did, or he did, tell me again.
He did the Robin book in the early 90s, and then he did the Nightwing book in the like mid to late 90s.
Yeah. So if you took Chuck Dixon and you said, okay, now you've got to write four characters that you don't know much about, that you've never wrote before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Roy Thomas has got a litany of things under his belt. So, but I don't know. I seriously doubt that Roy Thomas was messing around with Dark Hawk a whole lot. Is that right? Did you see his name?
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's kind of tough for somebody to say, okay, now you have these four characters to play with. Okay, I can do that in an issue or two. And that's probably, honestly, why you would keep it at three arcs. Because any more than that, three issue arcs, I should say, any more than that, you run the risk of potentially, you know, creating some type of out of continuity crap that you didn't know you were doing, or, you know, I'm not being true to the character. This is just a one and done, boom, here we go. So that might be one of the things that supports your argument for, well, it wasn't it didn't get me. It was because he's got a lot of things that he's got to try to take into account. Please a lot of fans. I mean, there's Darkhawk fans he's got to please. He's got to please Wolverine fans. He's got to please Nomad fans. So if it was me, I'd be playing it safe. And I'd be worried about making one person shine more than the other and try to make it a team book to watch these people get along together. But either way, I mean, it was an issue of 90s comics. It definitely took me back. Reading some Darkhawk. And it's probably one of the few issues that you can find all these people in one issue, you know? So... All right, man. Well, let's go ahead. We'll get into plugs, sir. What do you got? What have you been doing? You got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BirdieMan34.
Right. Very good. Well, look, we have all sorts of great upcoming content here on the Unspoken Issues podcast. Go check out the Unspoken Issues Facebook page. That's where we post our polls. We are affiliated with the Unspoken Decade. However, that Facebook page doesn't allow you to set polls. So we set up our own little Facebook page to do that on, and we want anybody who enjoys this podcast to come over there, join the group, and vote. Other than that, make sure to check out the Unspoken Decade for all your 90s comic book needs. Slogan:
never has the gimmick era been covered so well.
That is beautiful. That's a beautiful thing.
Did someone say Unspoken Decade? The place where you need to go to check out some great articles about comics in the 90s? This would be a good time to plug a sponsor of the W2M Network, and that is Grammarly. For you, the listeners of Unspoken Issues, Grammarly is offering a free download of the Grammarly software. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M network to download Grammarly for free.
Check that out. And then, of course, shout out to the W2M Network for hosting the podcast. And of course, the Rattlechin Broadcasting Network as well. So with that being said, for Chris Armstrong, I'm Jesse Starcher. We'll be talking to you next time. Have a good one. Bye-bye.